who you know and the books you read are one facet. But the other facet is we always overestimate what we can do in the short term, and we underestimate what we can do in the long term. Do not discount yourself in what's possible in 5 years. If you are in that place of brokenness and darkness and loneliness and pain, in 5 years, you're going to be in a very, very different place if you'll give yourself permission to let go of today so that you can embrace tomorrow.
Welcome to Starve the Doubts. I'm your host, Jared Easley, joining us today from Franklin, Tennessee, Chris Murphy from ShovelCloud.com. Hey, Chris.
Hey, what's happening, guys?
And Chris, we are blessed and fortunate to have someone that you're no stranger to. In fact, you had coffee with him yesterday.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And I'm a little bit bitter about not being involved and not being allowed to come to that. But I don't live in Tennessee, so that's why. We're welcoming Angus Nelson today from AngusNelson.com. Hi, Angus.
Hi. Great to see you guys.
That was one of the best hellos that we've had in recent episodes. So thank you. Angus, now, we just chatted about this. I think it's important to bring this up. At one point in all of our lives, we spent a certain amount of years in a certain state, in the same state. Yeah. And that state is Alabama. So I think there's no better way to kick off this podcast episode with starting with you, Angus, sharing a memory from Alabama. It can be any memory, but it has to be a memory from Alabama.
So I would establish this. I have a lot of memories of Alabama since I met my wife in Alabama. I had kids in Alabama. But I think I would establish this. There are three parts to Alabama. Chris and I were talking about this. There is Huntsville, Alabama, where I lived. And anyone in Alabama thinks like they're the city folk for some reason. They're all hoity-toity, technology-driven, whatever, military, right? That's one part. And then the second part is the hidden gem. We call it the Redneck Riviera. That's the beach. People don't know that it touches the Gulf of Mexico. And it's beautiful. Gulf Shores. It's got Point Clear. It's got Orange Beach. It's just phenomenal. And then the rest of Alabama makes up the third part. Well, one of my favorite memories was just going down to Gulf Shores and Orange Beach. I was with some friends of ours. We went down as couples and we rented out a condo together. And we sat down one night and I was trying to figure out, like, I have all these different iterations of my life. And I'm trying to figure out with my friend, Clint Byers. He's an author. He's now a pastor up in Atlanta. And I'm like, Clint, like, what is the symmetry to all of these different experiences and things that I do? And we'd polished off a bottle of wine and he turns to me. He's like, you know what, Angus, you empower people. Mm. And that was the beginning of something new in my life.
Wow. Well, let's take a moment and empower Chris Murphy. Chris, do you have a Alabama memory?
Well, the fact that almost every single day of my life until I was about 21 or 22 was spent in Alabama, there are a lot of them. So trying to narrow down last year, and now I live in Nashville, and last year I took my kids to their very first Alabama football game. And that was a pretty cool sight to behold because I'm a pretty passionate Alabama football fan. Again, because we had no pro sports, college was everything. And in Alabama, football is the king of sports there in the South. And so my kids have heard me root for this random team that they didn't have any association with until they went to the game too. So now they kind of sit around me in the living room when I'm jumping up and down, screaming or getting angry and throwing stuff at the TV. So they get it a little bit more now. So I think that that's my latest, greatest memory is to see the look on their face when we come up out of like the tunnel area and walk out onto the area where we're going to find our seats. Them seeing the field and all those people for the first time, it was a pretty cool moment.
Until they start hearing profanity and all kinds of vile conversation that Alabama fans have.
No, whoa. That's coming. That's coming from the Auburn fans. Alabama's handing it to them.
Oh, man. I have heard Alabama fans. Anyway, we'll move on from that. You know, I'm going to point this out. I'm going to throw Chris under the bus for a second. We went to a conference in Las Vegas a few years ago. We spent a lot of money to attend this conference.
Oh, I know what's going.
Flew to Las Vegas, stayed in a nice casino resort, you know, there to invest in relationships, Angus, to hang out, to network, to enjoy all that this conference had. And there was one evening of this conference where Chris was just like, I'm not doing anything. I'm going to the sports book to watch Alabama play. And of course, in fairness, Alabama was in the national championship game. So any Alabama fan will be like, well, he did the right thing. But I did find that kind of funny, is there are so many people in this country that would not skip out on an expensive event to go watch a football game. But Alabama fans would do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I was antisocial that night because I had to watch the game. And luckily they did win, and that was a lot of fun. But I did have to duck in and out of a very important meetup with some people that I really wanted to meet. And it was weird that both of those things were happening at the same time. But luckily, not too many people have held it against me since then. Except for my good buddy, Jared.
Hey, I'm still bitter. Angus, would you grant me the grace to share two?
Sure.
I know the rest of you have shared one, but I feel like I need to step up here. So there are two things. One of them is, since we're talking about Alabama football, I'm going to go ahead and go there. I lived in Hawaii for a few years. I was stationed there in the Navy. I don't know if either of you knew that. I think Chris knew that. Yeah. And there was a time when Alabama was on probation. I enjoy talking about Alabama being on probation. So let's take the next 10 minutes and focus on that. But no, there was a time when Alabama was on probation and they couldn't go to a bowl game. And so their scheduling allowed them to play the University of Hawaii at Hawaii. So it was kind of like a defunct bowl game, if you will, during probation. And so growing up in Alabama and living in Hawaii, all these Alabama people are coming to Oahu to go to this Alabama-Hawaii football game. And I remember I had a friend and I had a date when we were going to a luau. And it, you know, that's a cultural experience, Angus. I don't know if you've been to Hawaii or not.
My wife is from Kailua on Oahu.
So I was not aware. I thought you said you met your wife in Alabama.
So it's a whole nother story, but continue.
Okay, all right. Well, yeah, we'll go back there. Okay. That said, so you understand. I mean, you go to a luau, that's supposed to be a cultural experience, and it's an exciting thing, and you don't just pay nothing to go to these things. Yeah. You have to cough up some money. And it's this great experience. And I remember going to this thing and having a date and having a friend and being excited about, you know, what the luau had to offer. And it's all these obnoxious Alabama football fans who were doing their college football chants during the luau.
Oh, gracious. No,
I mean, like, and the Hawaiians that are on stage are like, what do we do? You know, it didn't matter what they did. It didn't matter if they were playing with fire or if it was these, you know, girls doing the Tahitian style hula. It didn't matter. Everything was, you know, Roll Tide. And I'll never forget. I was like, how can an Alabama crowd just totally ruin a luau? But I won't say they ruined it, but they made their presence known. And for people that weren't Alabama fans, I'm sure they didn't quite as appreciate that luau. But that's kind of a testimony of Alabama fans are so fanatic that they go all the way over to a different place like Hawaii. And, you know, they can't behave themselves, I guess. Yeah,
that's when your date looks at you and said, didn't you say that you lived in Alabama? And you're like, no, Arkansas.
Alaska. I am from Alabama. I don't hide that. But the other one is, if you ever go through Montgomery, there's a little town right outside of Montgomery. It's called Wetumpka. And you can go up to Wetumpka and you can rent these kayaks and canoes and go down the Alabama River. And it is so nice, Angus. I'm telling you do it in spring, or you do it when the weather's a little bit warm, not too hot, and you get that kayak or canoe and just go down the river, and it is incredible. If I were ever living in that river region in Alabama again, I would do that every season I could, because I think that's one of the best kept secrets in that area. So if you're ever in Montgomery, you gotta go get the kayak and the canoe and go down the river. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Okay, so I didn't mean to get hung up on that, but Angus, let's go back to you for a moment. There's possible there's people be like, Angus, I think I know, I don't know. Let's take a big swim in Lake U. What are you up to? Who are you? So on and so forth.
So again, I have many iterations. So I work for a company called Crowd Companies. I work with Fortune 1000 companies globally to help them find opportunities to play in the space of what some would call the sharing economy. We call it the collaborative economy, and it's kind of expanded beyond that to all areas of innovation and disruption. So Uber, Lyft, we all know kind of those brands. Then it transpires into autonomous vehicles, Internet of Things, the maker movement, cryptocurrencies, et cetera, et cetera. So it's got a whole lot of aspects. My role is as head of member success. So I run the community of our association or our club. So the big brands pay us to educate them in space and find opportunities for them to partner or create their own startups in that space. So that's one iteration. Then the other iteration is angusnelson.com, where I coach. And what I find while I'm doing my member success role is I help people in innovation, because innovation's lonely. You're basically hired to make people angry, to say that this company that's been around for 60, 80, 100 years and doing it the same way, and you have to tell them they have to do it a different way. And so I create an environment for them to feel safe and to connect. And so that's where these two kind of collide. So with AngusNelson.com, I have a podcast called Up in Your Business, and that helps people with their business expertise.
I love that name, by the way.
Thank you. And then the second side of it is the actual figurative Up in Your Business is the psychological and emotional elements that are necessary for success. So I coach and I facilitate, and then I also speak on some of those issues. So that's kind of it in its entirety.
One thing that I have a question about, Angus, is Chris Murphy and I were chatting about this earlier. What do you say to Chris if he's asking the question, I want to be my most effective self? How do I do that?
So that's like a huge question that cannot be answered simple because it's different for every person, right? So here's the thing is we don't recognize many times in our own world that we create our own chaos and that the truth that we know or the reality that we know is simply a manifestation of my environment and my experience. And until I can take the blinders off to see other people's environments and other people's experience, I can't understand my own. So part of it is a place of humility, and part of it is an area where, for lack of better terms, I call it a place of brokenness. And that's this whole element of self-awareness. We are so pious and arrogant in our own realities that sometimes it takes us getting knocked off of our little high horse to finally see that we can experience life and the world through a place of observation. And that's where becoming your most effective self really becomes powerful. Because in the middle of a conversation, I can observe how I'm interplaying with the world around me in such a way that I can recognize when I myself am operating out of insecurity, fear, or shame, or guilt, or fill in the blank. I might exaggerate, I might lie, I might lose my temper. All of those being fruits of something far deeper. And again, that's that emotional and psychological element. So not to go really deep on you really fast, but I kind of went really deep on you really fast.
That's cool.
So to become self-aware is kind of the premise to you becoming most effective. Because when you truly understand yourself, you can understand others. And just to give you an example, people say that when we get to communication, like in marriage, we've got to communicate more. Well, most of us seek communication of me trying to convince you of what I believe, what I'm trying to say, what I'm trying to convey. But the real power of communication is when you can understand how the person across from you perceives what you're saying, and you can deliver it in a way that they can receive it. That's the true power of communication. Not how I want to communicate it, but can I say it in a way that they can receive it and feel safe and act on the very thing that you're trying to communicate. Mm.
Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was going to say that seems so wise because I think that a lot of times that the breakdown in communication seems to be someone's biggest hurdle in kind of moving to the next level of what they want to accomplish in life, whether it's business or it's their family. They've got a communication gap. It takes so much to overcome that. So if you really sit down with somebody and you see that communication is broken, what are some tips that you give them to kind of go to the next level or to work on their communication skills getting better?
The first thing I would say is get a third party. Mm. Someone's at the door. Pizza guy's here.
It's the third party.
I'm so sorry, guys.
That was perfect. Yeah, no problem. So like now he's stepping out, but
that's how Star of the Doubts is. But yeah, let's keep going.
So this third party is someone that can listen to your words and process it in light of an objective perspective. Again, if we're all the victims of our own chaos that we've created, then it's really hard for us to recognize, our BS, right?
Yeah.
Right.
We can't even recognize that we're lying to ourselves sometimes. And at the same token, to have that other person that you're trying to communicate to understand where they're coming from is very difficult for you because you're so involved in your narcissistic, selfish reality. If you have a third person come in and they can see objectively, then they help bridge the two. For instance, when I read the book Five Love Languages, that was a game changer for me. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but for your listeners, Five Love Languages talks about five things that all of us communicate in order to receive or to give love. And all of them are different. Might be acts of service. That might be my way of communicating love. It might be gifts, you know, small tokens of appreciation. It might be my words of affirmation. It may be touch, or it may be time. And of those five things, if my love language is time, but my spouse's or my partner's love language is acts of service, then it's as if we're speaking Japanese and German, and neither one of us will connect. Because I will do all these great things for my partner and say, oh, I'm going to do this, and I fixed the lawnmower, and I did the dishes, and da-da-da. And it's as if I'm saying, I love you, 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 I love you through my actions. But they can't even understand that language, because what they really want you to do is whatever their language is. And I forgot what that other one is. And so in that same token, to have a third person kind of step in and be able to connect the dots, that's really where you can start to see the breakdowns in the communication and turn around and say, oh, aha moment, maybe I can do this different. I know for me and my wife, we went to counseling both before we got married, and then we went and sought a marriage counselor. It was the same person. He's a good friend of mine. And he has absolute permission to speak into our lives and call us on our stuff. And we've been married, it'll be 9 years in July. And last year, we were going through a moment where we weren't seeing eye to eye on some stuff. And so I called up my friend who was in Alabama and drove down to Alabama. I live in Nashville. And we spent 2 hours chatting with him. And he helped the two of us, me and my wife, go through the stuff that we're experiencing, why we're experiencing, how we're experiencing, and helped us to understand each other better so that we could rise above it.
You mentioned something earlier about lying to yourself, and I was curious, do you have an example of a time where you've lied to yourself?
Absolutely. So when I was starting a company back, 96, 97, I started a nonprofit organization with my brother, and we got to a point where nonprofit is a very competitive space, and even more so in a small city. And in our particular city, there were a couple other organizations doing similar things to what we were doing, but not quite as unique and progressive. We started this arts-driven youth center. It was when we finally opened, it was like 1999. We had a cyber cafe, so we had computers and internet. And back then, like, that did not exist in central Wisconsin where I grew up. And so we're doing very progressive things. We were bringing in bands from all over the country to play and perform. That was not being done. And then in addition, we were teaching kids how to do graphic arts. And then I was also doing this life studies, which was like a leadership development course. But we didn't have any backing from anyone prestigious within the community. So we were fighting to make it happen. And I told myself that if I work hard, that I can make this happen. Mm-hmm. And when that didn't work, I told myself, if I work harder, then I can make it happen. And when that wasn't working, I said, if I work even harder. And I convinced myself that the more that I strive, the more that I endured and persevered, the more that it would become possible. And what I came to learn is that's a lie. Because I did it all under my own power, my own striving, and my own exertion. And at no point in time did I build a team, learn how to delegate, learn how to ask for help. And as a result, because of my exhaustion, I turned to coping through addiction, pornography, alcohol, and I was married during the time. So when it went to the last piece of me starting to sleep around, I ended up in divorce. Wow. Out of my own arrogance, out of my own, you know, false lies that I was telling myself that I got this covered, I can handle this. And if I just work harder, I can make it work, were absolute lies. And as a result, I went through that period I shared before about self-awareness, and that is brokenness. I lost my marriage. I lost that organization. I lost my dreams and I lost my passion. I spent the next 3 years in a place of darkness of just feeling sorry for myself, licking my own wounds, and basically stepping in and out of those coping mechanisms for the next 3 years until I finally got some help.
What did help look like for you in those moments with dealing with that brokenness and saying that it was a 3-year process? 3 years is a long time to do anything, but especially living in that kind of constant state of anger or sadness or regret. How did you deal with that and start to come out on the other side?
So it's progressive, right? There's no silver bullet. It's all progressive. And so the name of this podcast is Starve the Doubts. I had to get to a point where I was feeding enough truth and reality in my mind that the doubts became starved.
Mm.
And so I was reading like a mofo. I was reading self-help books. I was getting up in the morning and I was listening to teachers, like faith teachers and people who shared things about God and his provision. And I'm like, you know what? I'm screwed up. He can't help me. I'm kind of, I've been rejected from this. This is not good for me. But my background came from ministry. And so another lie was that I was rejected and that I was no longer worth anything. Yeah. And I'd lost my value. And in that 3 years, I went through what I call like a spiritual schizophrenia, where I knew enough about my faith and God and seeing him work in other people's lives, but I wasn't seeing in my own life. So I would go to the club, I would sing karaoke, I would be there till 2 a.m, you know, and doing my thing. And then I'd come home and pace my living room floor and cry out to God, say, God, is there another way? God, how come you don't work in my life? Where did I blow it? Where is it possible to redeem this mess? And at the end of that 3 years, I started seeing a counselor. He challenged me to read a book by a guy named John Eldridge called Wild at Heart.
Yeah.
And I devoured that book. And it spoke to the principles of man. And the one question that every man wrestles with is, do I have what it takes? And I finally got to the point where I don't have what it takes.
Hmm.
But I know who does. And I learned to rest in this thing called grace. And when I understood that, everything changed.
At what point did you meet your wife that you've now been with for 9 years? Because we've heard about, you know, some of these failures and things, but now you have something that's positive and you have a good marriage. So let's talk about that transition.
So that was 2005. I made a decision that one of the gentlemen I've been reading, he was an author, he was also a speaker and a pastor, was in Huntsville, Alabama. And I was in Wisconsin, and I finally told my parents, I said, I'm putting my house on the market. I'm moving to Alabama. And they were supportive. They said, that's weird, but we're supportive. Go do it. So I moved to Alabama, and bless their hearts, like my dad really helped to get that house sold and get it shown and stuff like that while I was in Alabama. Like, it was really crazy generous of them to help. And I sat under this guy for a year. My plan was to just get mentored under him and kind of rework my brain. This gentleman had like a holistic approach about the emotions and spiritual life and where's Jesus in all of this. And we started putting Humpty Dumpty back together again. So I'm doing classes with this guy that's mentoring me, and I'm attending his church. And this woman walks in, and she's volunteering with the children's ministry. And I'd seen her before, and on the TV was UFC, mixed martial art. And me and some guys were all hanging out. My wife walks in and says, oh, that's Matt Hughes and GSP. And I'm like, I don't even know who these people are. And so she's talking UFC, and all my guy friends are like, how do you even know this stuff? She's like, I grew up in Hawaii. I used to be a fan back when it was cage matches and it was illegal and blah, blah. She's like, I watch it every month on pay-per-view. So I had 2 weeks before the next pay-per-view was happening. And so 15 of us showed up at this woman's apartment. And in that 2 weeks, I'd studied what is Muay Thai, what is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And like, I'm like studying this stuff up. And well, so for done. The next, like, right. So for the next 6 to 9 months, I was over her house like 2 or 3 times a week, because between the pay-per-views and then the reality show they had in the house, what was it called? Fighter, whatever, the US.
Yeah, Ultimate Fighter.
Ultimate Fighter. Yeah, Ultimate Fighter. Yep. And then American Idol. So between those three things, like a whole bunch of us would always show up at her place. And so I got to know her just as friends. And then I'm like, huh, I kind of like this girl. And at the end of my year term, I thought, well, maybe I'll just stick around and see where this goes. And we started dating. And I shared with her all my stuff. And I said, look, you know, this is the real me. I'm not fixed yet. I'm still in process. And if you're cool with that, you know, well, then maybe we can make something work. And she showed me so much grace during all that time and encouragement. And she knew my stuff, but at the same time, she wouldn't let me get away with some of the stuff when I would run away from it or some of my nuances. I actually called a period of this time kind of like the George Costanza. There's one episode where Costanza did the opposite of every natural impulse and life suddenly started working for him. He got promoted. Remember that episode? Of course, he jacked it up in the end, but that was me. Is like every natural impulse I had, I started to try and do the opposite. And it started to work. And so 2007, we got married. And 2008, 2009, I'm working another nonprofit. That job, we had to close it down. And my wife challenged me to stay at home with our first child. We had one child from her previous marriage, who at the time, I think she was 10 or 11. And so we had one child. And she said, finish a book that I had started. And that was a book about that period of life that I went through. And 4 months later, we found out we're pregnant with the next child. So suddenly I felt really invigorated to finish the book. And so I wrote a book called Love's Compass, and it tells the whole period of that divorce and all the elements and lessons learned up until me and my wife met and got married. And kind of a side note to all of that is after I released the book, it was 2010, and I got asked by a friend if I would go to this writer's conference. I end up winning Most Promising New Writer. I had a number of people approach me to be literary agents. I picked one who represented Donald Miller, one of my favorite authors, and they pitched me to all of these publishers, and they turned me down because I wasn't famous. They said the book was too raw, too narrative, and I didn't have a platform. So I self-published, and I started learning about social media and how to use it to market and tell stories. And that got me into social business marketing. And through that, I met my colleague, who I now work with today with Crowd Companies. And so all of that is really related and divinely orchestrated in ways that I could have never done in my own strength, in my own wisdom, or in my own, you know, crafty manipulation. It's been a crazy ride.
Wow, it sounds like it. It sounds like, I mean, if it didn't work out the way that it did, you would not have ended up in Alabama. You would not have met your wife. All of these things seem like they take this circuitous route, but yet it leads you to the place where you are today, where it sounds like you're right in the middle of where you need to be. So it's an interesting ride. And I'm assuming that's a lot of what Love's Compass is about.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, furthermore, even, you know, my podcast, Up in Your Business, you know, one of the things that I recognized in all of this, and this is why I love being on this show, Star of the Doubts, is most of our limitations are because of reasons we've planted in our own minds that tell us that we are discounted, we're not as valuable, and we're not as good as everything around us. We look at other podcasters, we look at other business people, we look at other mothers or fathers, and we say, man, I'll never be like that. I could never do like this. Or in our own fears, we've lied to ourselves and said, well, I can't do that because if I expose myself, then what? If I put myself out there, what if they reject me? Because we think that our art or our craft or our expression, some way we equate that to who we are and we tie our person into our project. And as such, we take that very personally and intimately. And if you reject my project, I think you're going to reject my person. Yeah. And until we can get over that hump, we're always going to sabotage every great opportunity. And I finally got to the point where I just removed that. And it's an ongoing thing. I haven't arrived. I'm constantly trying to remove those barriers that every time I get afraid of something, that's the very thing I lean into.
Hmm. Angus, what do you say to the person listening right now who's going through brokenness?
The number one thing I tell people who are going through something is this: you are not alone. We think in the midst of our pain that we're the only one. And you have to know that I've gone through stuff. Jared has gone through stuff. Chris is going through stuff. Like, there are people in the world who are experiencing things that you may think are very unique and particular to you. And you have to know that many, many, many people have walked down the road that you're on, whether it's addiction, whether it's a loss of a job, whether it's divorce, whether it's a sick child, whether it's other family issues, no matter where you are at, there is provision if you will reach out and ask for help.
Wow. It sounds like we're on a call with you of how you were speaking earlier about how you would tell somebody that has that issue of connecting or communication of how to go to a deeper level. And it seems like that we sat with you for the last 25, 30 minutes and gone to a deeper level. Is this a lot of what your coaching encompasses, other than helping people get to the next level business-wise, but also, I'm assuming that a lot of people, their limiting beliefs they have to get past before they can find success at that next level. Is this often a lot of what your coaching or your mentorship looks like?
Every time.
Awesome.
Every time. We are our own hindrance. And
sure.
We can never go to the next level and, you know, take on something else. And I like to think of it like this. If you hold up both hands, like both of you guys, if you put your hands out in front, you know, if you close your hands, you know, make two fists, you know, your palms up, two fists, and you want to grasp onto something new, what do you have to do to grab something new?
You have to open your hand.
You have to open your hand. Mm. You have to let go of what you know in order to grasp something that you don't know.
That's
and
awesome.
And you're so committed to that chaos because in my chaos, at least I'm comfortable. I know what to expect. But the moment you ask me to step out of my chaos into a strange land, that seems scary, intimidating. And that last question that we addressed before, do I even have what it takes to venture into this land? I'm not so sure.
Mm. If somebody is inspired by what you're saying today and wants to connect with you at a deeper level, maybe if it's just, you know, chatting with you, shooting you an email or coaching, whatever that looks like, how do they connect with you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Angus Nelson. You can find me on my website, angusnelson.com. And if you want to email me, I love getting email. You can email me at hello@angusnelson.com.
That's a good email address.
Hello.
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 After this episode, we're going to try to get Chris to sing Hello by Lionel Richie.
Oh, not Adele?
Not Adele, yeah. I don't want to hear that. Angus, what are your final thoughts for the listeners?
So, you know, Jared and I first met, and neither one of us can remember who introduced us years ago. And Jared was in a place where he was wrestling with what his next steps were. I was wrestling in my life with what my next steps were.
And Chris was just doing professional wrestling, I believe. But
he was probably in
MMA. MMA.
And there you go. Yes. There you go. And I just love the fact that our stories, not that we've arrived at where we're headed, but we've found a place that we're getting to our stride. And I use that as kind of a metaphor for anyone who's listening, that where you are now and where you are in the next 5 years, know this, who you know and the books you read are one facet. But the other facet is we always overestimate what we can do in the short term and we underestimate what we can do in the long term. Do not discount yourself in what's possible in 5 years. If you are in that place of brokenness and darkness and loneliness and pain, in 5 years, you're going to be in a very, very different place if you'll give yourself permission to let go of today so that you can embrace tomorrow. In the same token, where you are professionally, if you will take on the mindset that I will embrace, engage in being present today and maximize every opportunity for relationship, for learning and growth, that where I will be in 5 years will surpass any dream or goal that I would normally put out in front of myself. I will overshoot that and experience a life of abundance and generosity in ways that I could never have done out of my own manipulation.
Oh, well said. Angus, I've been fortunate to meet a lot of people through this show, and I can say that you are one of the most generous and sincere, and you are very giving, and I just want to tell you how much I appreciate that example. Thank you for that.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you, guys. Most of our limitations are because of reasons we've planted in our own minds that tell us that we are discounted, we're not as valuable, and we're not as good as everything around us. Yeah. And until we can get over that hump, we're always going to sabotage every great opportunity.